Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to explore fascinating stories, pull out the key facts, and, well, really get under the surface of things.
And today, we're definitely going under the surface. We're looking at something humans have been drawn to for ages, exploring underwater.
Absolutely. You think about Leonardo da Vinci sketching submersibles or David Bushnell's turtle back in the American Revolution. That dream's always been there.
But we're focusing on a specific, maybe lesser known chapter, the U.S. Civil War, and specifically the dawn of submarine warfare with the CSS Hunley.
Right, the Hunley. It's this incredible story because it was actually the first combat submarine ever to sink an enemy warship.
A huge milestone, but also a really tragic tale.
Exactly. So our mission today is to unpack how the Hunley came to be, its pretty harrowing role in the war, and then its lasting impact. It's not just military tech. It's about innovation, human cost, and how we connect with the past through things like archaeology.
And we've got some great sources guiding us, detailed accounts from places like Warfare History Network, the Naval History and Heritage Command, archives from the Encyclopedia of Alabama.
Yeah, and even recent stuff from Clemson News, plus some dedicated YouTube channels like Forgotten History and Beluga Sub that have covered it really well.
Okay, so to really get the Hunley, you need the context of the Civil War itself. For anyone maybe not super familiar, you've got the Union the North versus the Confederacy the South.
And navally speaking, it was, well, pretty lopsided from the start.
Oh, massively. In early 1861, the Union Navy had something like 90 ships, the Confederacy, maybe 30. That imbalance really shaped everything that happened at sea.
It led directly to the Union's big strategy, didn't it? The Anaconda Plan.
That's right. President Lincoln's plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the name fits the goal was to squeeze the life out of the Confederacy, blockade their entire coastline, all 3,500 miles of it, focusing on 12 major ports.
To strangle their trade, cut off cotton going out, stop war supplies coming in.
Precisely. And for the Confederacy, this was a huge problem. They had very limited shipbuilding capacity, not much money, few decent shipyards.
I read that the Tredegar Iron Works in Richmond was basically their only major source for big guns and armor plating at first.
Yeah, initially it put them at a severe disadvantage, so they had to get inventive. They had to rely on ingenuity to try and counter that Union naval power.
And we often think of the Civil War as land battles, Gettysburg, Vicksburg, but the naval side, especially on rivers and coasts, was really critical too.
Absolutely vital. And this is where you see that desperation sparking some incredible technological leaps, like the ironclads. Have you heard much about those?
Oh yeah, the ironclads. They were revolutionary, right? Armored warships that just changed naval battles overnight.
Completely. Think of the Confederacy's CSS Virginia that was the rebuilt Merrimack. It just devastated traditional wooden Union ships like the Congress and Cumberland.
And there were others too.
Mm-hmm. The CSS Manassas was actually the first ironclad in battle back in October 61. Then you had the Palmetto State, Chicora, Tennessee. The South was really pushing their ironclad tech despite their limitations.
So you've got this crushing blockade, limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
The Confederacy needed something radical, something unconventional.
Exactly. And that's where the idea of submersibles really takes hold. The Confederate government was so desperate, they even offered big cash bounties.
How big are we talking?
Up to 20% of the value of any Union warship sunk. Or, get this, $50,000 for private citizens who could design and use a successful weapon. That's serious money back then.
Wow. Okay, so that really sets the stage for someone like Hunley to step in.
Precisely. It wasn't just patriotism. There was a clear financial incentive driving this innovation. And the key figures behind the Hunley were Horace Lawson Hunley himself.
The guy it's named after. He's a planter, right. And put his own money in.
Yeah, a wealthy sugar and cotton planter, also a customs agent. He invested a significant $30,000 personally. Then you had James McClintock, an engineer and riverboat captain, and Baxter Watson, another engineer.
So it started as a private venture, not a government project.
Initially, yes. Driven by these guys, fueled by the war effort and those potential bounties, their first attempt was in New Orleans, 1861-62. They called it the Pioneer.
What was it like?
Pretty small. About 34 feet long, 4 feet across, conical ends, only needed two guys to crank the propeller.
Did it work?
It did, surprisingly well in tests. February 62, they took it out on the Mississippi and Lake Pontchartrain. It was slow, leaked a bit, but it actually sank a couple of target barges and a schooner using a towed torpedo.
A towed torpedo, so like dragging an explosive charge behind it.
Exactly. But its career was cut short. Union forces were closing in on New Orleans in April 62, so they had to scuttle the Pioneer in a canal to stop it being captured.
Man, setback number one. So what next?
They didn't give up. Hunley, McClintock, and Watson moved to Mobile, Alabama, teamed up with some local engineers, Thomas Park and Thomas Lyons. And here they got some Confederate Army support.
And built another one?
Yep, the American Diver. This one was more experimental. They actually tried an electromagnetic drive.
Like battery power in the 1860s.
Kind of a primitive version, yeah. And even a steam engine. But neither really worked underwater, not powerful enough or just impractical. So they went back to a hand crank, but bigger. Needed four men cranking plus a pilot.
Did this one fare any better?
Not really. Trials in Mobile Bay, January 63, showed it was still just too slow. They tried an attack in February 63, again planning to tow a torpedo under a Union ship.
Let me guess. It didn't go well.
Nope. It sank in a storm near the mouth of the bay. The crew got out alive that time, thankfully, but the sub was lost.
Two attempts, two failures. Their persistence is pretty remarkable.
It really is, because they immediately started on a third one, right there in Mobile, 1863. This became the H.L. Hunley, though they initially called it the fishboat or porpoise.
And this design incorporated everything they learned.
You'd hope so. They used a cylindrical iron boiler about 25 feet long, cut it, and extended it to nearly 40 feet. Still only about 4 feet wide, 5 feet deep.
40 feet long, 4 feet wide. That's incredibly tight for a crew. How many people?
Eight. Seven men packed shoulder to shoulder, turning this long crankshaft connected to the propeller, generated maybe 3.5 horsepower, giving them a top speed of about 4 knots, and yeah. One poor guy trying to pilot.
Imagine being inside that, dark, cramped.
Extremely.
Yeah.
The only light was supposedly a single candle near the pilot so he could see the mercury depth gauge. They figured they had about 30 minutes of air, maybe.
30 minutes is terrifying. Just the conditions alone.
It's hard to fathom the bravery or maybe desperation. For depth control, it had ballast tanks flood them to sink, pump them out by hand to rise, plus iron weights bolted to the bottom they could drop for a quick emergency surface.
And the weapon. They ditched the towed torpedo idea.
They did. This was a key improvement. They developed the spar torpedo, a copper keg holding about 135 pounds of gunpowder, mounted on a long pole, a spar, maybe 16 feet long, sticking out from the bow.
So the plan was to ram this into the enemy ship.
Exactly. Ram the barbed end into the hull, quickly back away by reversing the crank, and then pull a lanyard to trigger the explosion. Much more direct and controllable than towing something.
Did they test this one successfully?
Yes. July 1863, in Mobile Bay, they demonstrated it for Admiral Franklin Buchanan, sank an old coal barge. That convinced the Confederate military it was a viable weapon.
So that went to the front lines.
Off to Charleston, South Carolina, which was under heavy siege by the Union. The Hunley was put on a train and shipped there August 12, 1863. The need was urgent.
But its arrival in Charleston, that's when things started to go really wrong, wasn't it? The whole floating coffin nickname.
Tragically, yes. The military, specifically General Beauregard, was impatient and basically took control from the civilian inventors, and the accident started almost immediately.
What happened first?
August 29th, 1863. First test dive in Charleston Harbor. A Navy Lieutenant, John Payne, was in command with 7 volunteers. They were diving with the hatches still open.
Hatches open? Why?
Maybe for air, maybe procedure, it's not entirely clear. But Payne accidentally hit the lever for the diving planes. The sub nose down, flooded instantly. Payne and 2 others near the hatches escaped. 5 men drowned inside.
Oh my God. Just like that. Michael Davis, Frank Doyle, John Kelly, Absalom Williams. Trapped.
A horrific start. They raised the sub, but then came the second sinking, October 15th, 1863.
This time with Hunley himself.
Yes. Horace Hunley came to Charleston, convinced the military crews just didn't know how to operate it properly. He took command for a practice dive under a stationary ship, the Indian Chief. He made a mistake managing the forward ballast tank. The sub dove sharply, nose first into the harbor mud, and flooded again. This time, all 8 men aboard, including Hunley, died. Probably asphyxiation.
8 more lives lost,
yeah.
Including the main guy behind it all.
Reports from the recovery were grim. Bodies contorted, faces blackened. It absolutely earned the floating coffin name. Beauregard seriously considered just scrapping the whole project then.
You really couldn't blame him. 13 men dead in 2 accidents before it even saw combat. Who would possibly volunteer after that?
You'd think no one. But then, Lieutenant George E. Dixon stepped forward. He was an Army veteran, 21st Alabama Infantry, wounded at the Battle of Shiloh.
Dixon. He's the one with the gold coin story, right?
That's him. Apparently, his sweetheart, Queenie Bennett, had given him an 1860 $20 gold piece for luck. At Shiloh, a Union bullet struck him in the thigh, hit the coin in his pocket, bent it, but deflected the bullet and saved his leg.
And they later found that coin with his remains in the sub.
They did. Mm-hmm. Forensic analysis confirmed the story. It adds this layer of, I don't know, destiny or fate to Dixon's involvement. He somehow convinced Beauregard to give the Hunley one more chance under his command.
Incredible. So Dixon assembled a new crew.
Yes, another group of volunteers. With Lieutenant William Alexander as his second in command, they trained extensively. They finalized the spar torpedo mounting on the bow. Beauregard, still wary, ordered them to attack mostly on the surface, only submerging at the very last moment.
And then came the night, February 17th, 1864.
A cold, calm night. The Hunley slipped out of Breach Inlet on Sullivan's Island, heading for the Union blockade line. Dixon chose his target, the USS Housatonic.
What kind of ship was the Housatonic?
A big one, a steam-powered sloop of war. Over 1,100 tons, 200 feet long, 12 cannons, a major blockading vessel anchored about 2.5, maybe 3 miles offshore.
So what happened when the Hunley approached?
Around 8.45 p.m., the acting master on the Housatonic, John Crosby, spotted something low in the water moving towards them. First thought it was a log, maybe a porpoise.
Didn't realize what it was.
Right. He sounded the alarm Confederate torpedo boat incoming, but it was moving fast, maybe 75 yards out. The Housatonic's big guns couldn't depress low enough to fire on it.
Could they shoot at it with small arms?
They tried. Muskets, shotguns. But the bullets just glanced off the Hunley's iron hull. It was too late.
The Hunley rammed the spar torpedo into its side.
Right into the starboard side, possibly near the ship's powder magazine. Then Dixon's crew frantically reversed the crank to back away.
And the explosion.
A muffled boom, then a huge geyser of water. The torpedo tore a massive hole in the Housatonic. The ship started sinking incredibly fast.
Wow. Yes.
Just 3 minutes. It went down in about 27 feet of water, its masts and rigging sticking out above the surface. 5 Union sailors died, but most of the crew scrambled into lifeboats or climbed the rigging and were rescued by other ships.
A historic moment.
Yeah.
The first submarine kill. But what are the Hunley?
That's the enduring mystery. Right after the explosion, watchers on shore saw the prearranged signal from the Hunley, a blue light, indicating success. Mission accomplished.
But then?
Then nothing. The Hunley and George Dixon and his 7 crewmen, they vanished. Never seen again that night. They achieved this monumental first and then disappeared without a trace.
So it succeeded, but at the cost of its own crew again. That legacy is so mixed, isn't it?
Absolutely. On one hand, despite the terrible human cost, the Hunley proved submersible warfare was possible. It was a catalyst. It showed the potential and undoubtedly influenced future submarine development in the U.S. and elsewhere.
It definitely set a precedent.
And it's also a testament to Confederate ingenuity. Yeah. You know, facing overwhelming odds, limited resources, they pushed the boundaries of technology, that spirit of industriousness, of adapting. It's remarkable.
But its disappearance became this huge maritime mystery for over a century.
131 years, yeah. People searched. P.T. Barnum even offered a $100,000 reward back in the day, but it wasn't found until 1995.
That was the Clive Cussler expedition, right? Using magnetometers.
Exactly. Yeah. Cussler's team located it, seaward of where the Housatonic wreck lies, buried under about 3 feet of silt and 30 feet of water.
And the recovery itself in 2000, that must have been incredible.
Oh, it was a major event. Huge crowds cheering as they carefully lifted it from the seabed. It was taken to the Warren Lash Conservation Center in North Charleston.
Which is part of Clemson University now.
That's right. And the work there has been fascinating. It's like this underwater archaeology, almost a forensic investigation.
What did they find inside? You mentioned Dixon's coin.
They found the remains of all 8 crewmen still at their stations. Which was a huge clue.
How so?
It suggested they didn't panic or try to escape. They likely died very quickly, possibly from the concussion, the shockwave of their own torpedo exploding so close by rather than drowning slowly.
That's a slightly less horrifying end, I suppose, but still tragic. And the artifacts.
Amazing finds. Personal items, tools, and yes, Dixon's bent gold coin, right where historical accounts suggested it would be. It just brought the human story to life.
And the conservation effort itself is cutting edge.
Very much so. They're using advanced scanning techniques, x-rays, 3D laser mapping. They even developed new methods, like a special process using heated water under pressure subcritical desalination to gently remove the corrosive salts from the iron hull over years.
So the Hunley is preserved in a tank now.
submerged in a sodium hydroxide solution to prevent further corrosion while they continue the slow desalination. And the knowledge gained is helping preserve other artifacts too, like ancient canoes and museum collections. It has a wider impact.
And finally, the crew themselves received a proper burial.
They did. April 17, 2004. A massive ceremony in Charleston. Tens of thousands attended. The remains of Dixon and his final crew were buried with full Confederate honors in Magnolia Cemetery, alongside the crews from the earlier sinkings. They all received the Confederate Medal of Honor posthumously.
A fitting tribute after so long. You can see the Hunley itself at the Conservation Center, and there's a replica in Mobile, too.
It really brings the story full circle, from ambition against all odds, through tragedy and triumph, to rediscovery and remembrance.
It's such a powerful story of daring, innovation, and immense human sacrifice.
Definitely leaves you thinking.
It really does. So for you listening, how do you think the Hunley should be remembered? Is it primarily a weapon of war, a symbol of incredible, maybe desperate innovation, or more a tragic human story of perseverance against the odds?
What part of this deep dive into the Civil War's hidden underwater battlefield really stands out to you?